a method for disassociating with the present. As always, I am your host, Phil Ahrensberg. I dig through the historical record to showcase humanity's weirdest bonus levels. Let's meet today's panel. First off, he's an award-winning filmmaker whose new movie, Alma and the Wolf, a batshit crazy horror film, hit select theaters and video on demand on June 20th. It's Michael Patrick Jan. Thanks for joining us today, Mike. How's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me, Phil. Wait, you're still going by Phil, right?
Sure, why not? Next, he's got a +5 on charisma and does 2d6 damage against ogres. Please welcome the King of Long Island, your pal and mine, Dan Love.
By the way, I take no responsibility for Long Island, despite being its king.
That's the way to do it. And finally, she's an actor, entrepreneur, and goddess of the harvest. In her free time, she homeschools her husband and two pugs and is currently interested in scrolling through her phone to the very end. Great to have you here on the show for the first time, Betsy Morris.
Well, hi, Betsy. Hi.
Excellent, excellent. Glad to have everyone here. How's everyone doing?
Fabulous.
Fantastic.
Excellent, excellent. All right, kids, the format is simple. I'm going to describe some strange event or person from history and ask you the panel questions about it. I will award points based on how much those answers amuse me, and the person with the highest score at the end wins. Today's chrononauts are competing, as always, for bragging rights and a box of Cap'n Crunch cereal. Today's topic, Outback Steakhouse or All Quiet on the Southern Front. Round one, why we fight. The thing to remember, first of all, is that Australia fought in the First World War. And when the war ended, the Australian government faced two pressing issues. First, they had an impending food shortage on their hand. The war had depleted any stores of grain and other staples, and so scarcity was looming on the horizon. Problem number two, a large number of veterans were returning home looking for work and peace and to get on with the rest of their lives. Luckily for the Australians, Parliament could kill two birds with one stone. As compensation for their service in the Great War, the returning troops were given land in Western Australia to call their own, and the government's expectation was that the men would take up farming, especially wheat, and bingo bango, problem solved. Okay, panel, first off, 4 points. Did this plan work? Let's start with you, Dan.
I originally thought your plan was going to involve eating the veterans. So actually, I'm very pleased that there's farming involved rather than cannibalism. I'm going to go with, as with all things Australian, no, it didn't work for a humorous reason that got a really funny name.
Hey, nice. Mike?
Well, I'm going to say it definitely worked because, as we all know, Western Australia is known globally as the breadbasket of the world.
Sure.
It's not known for its spiders and evolutionary anomalies. It's known for the vast, green, nourishing food that's produced there.
Excellent.
And finally, Betsy?
Oh, no, that didn't work. No. I'm going to say no.
No.
First of all, as far as I know, everything from Australia, you know, we're talking crazy animals, insects, they're trying to kill you all the time. And also, who just wants wheat? You know, can't we do better than just wheat?
And it would be Australian wheat, so it would be poisonous and spin webs.
You go to the grocery store and you see the 100% Australian wheat marker on it, you're always like, well, that's the mark of quality.
Right.
Yeah.
And highly venomous Australian wheat.
Right. And the fine wombat meats of Australia are really, they've taken, every dinner table is covered.
It's the only wheat that reproduces by laying eggs.
I also think that wheat is probably just what's in their beer, you know?
Sure.
Exactly. Well, technically, it's in everyone's beer.
Right.
Yeah, but Australian beer.
So, as Mike pointed out, one major problem was that Western Australia is not the best farming country. A report at the time described the region as being agriculturally marginal. Not much can grow on the edges of a vast sandy desert.
Oh, man, if I had a dime for every time I'd been called that.
Sure.
Agriculturally marginal.
At least have 5 dimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the onset of the Great Depression in 1929, the farmers were encouraged to increase their wheat crops, with the government promising and also failing to deliver assistance in the form of subsidies. So these are guys who are freshly home from the greatest conflict in human history. They're given some worthless land to farm. Then the world economy collapses and the government advises them to grow more, promising money and delivering nothing.
I'm sure
so this is how Mad Max starts. That's what we're saying. Yeah.
I think this is why Mad Max just looks like Australia in the 70s.
Exactly.
It basically is. I think that's it. Yeah. It was an Australian director too, right?
Sure, yeah.
And so unto this mixture of economic crisis and agricultural depression strode approximately 20,000 emus. Panel, going to you now. Emu or emu and why? Betsy.
Emu. Emu, it sounds like a bank, you know? Emu. I'm going to go for emu because it's also, it's sort of, it makes eggs, but is the most similar to a cow of the aviary world. So emu, hard answer. There you go.
Okay. Mike?
Well, I think I'm going to try to say it with an Australian accent and just see how it comes out.
Okay.
Emu. Yeah, see, that's what it is, mew. Because you can't say emu doesn't sound like an Australian accent, but emu. That's my dead on.
Right.
Completely authentic Australian.
That's uncanny.
That's like a Perth suburb right there. That's wonderful. That's amazing.
This is the reality show that I appear on.
The Real Housewives of Perth.
Real Housewives.
Suburban Perth. Exactly.
And then Dan, what are you saying? Emu or emu?
I'm saying emu from the French, and I refuse to explain further.
Right.
All right. Fair enough. Great. So how familiar is everyone with the emu? Do we know anything about them?
I know they're ornery. That's what I know.
Yes. They're and here we're going to show, because we did find Phil and I are college friends, and my degree is in zoology, so that's useless. But what I did learn is birds are terrible, and they hate us all and would murder us in our sleep if they could. And the other thing I know is, so emu are terrible, and we should be terrified of them. And I also believe they lay eggs that are like armored, if I remember properly. Which is just terrible. It's another example of this is nature saying don't touch. So I'm going to say they're ornery and terrible and probably heavily armed. They probably have some sort of natural and poisonous or venomous.
Right. Well, Dan, your zoology degree has earned you some points there.
I'm going to say that to me, the emu has always just been the poor man's ostrich.
Wow. I think it's
very
also
true.
Shot. It's like if someone shows up with a new set of like boots and they're like, oh, emu.
Mm. Oh.
Couldn't spring for the ostrich, huh?
Yeah.
I think it's also important to note that most birds, those that can fly, which of course I don't believe the emu can, but they normally poop before they go somewhere to drop some weight, you know? So.
Sure.
I'm just saying. Right. I'm not sure. Are they fast in emu? They've got the legs for it.
Funny you mention that, Betsy. Emus are large flightless birds. Mm-hmm. Adults typically stand about 6.5 feet tall. They weigh anywhere between 110 and 140 pounds and are known for reaching a top speed of about 30 miles an hour.
How many humans do they kill a year?
Per capita,
I think that's going to become an important fact when you take a bunch of heavily armed Australians who are suffering from PSDD and have no ability to farm and place them in the same area.
It's a good thing none of these people are drunk.
Right. It's very good that's not a problem.
So emus or emus regularly migrate after their breeding system, heading to the coast from the inland. With all the cleared land and additional water supplies, courtesy of the Western Australian farmers, the emus had found an ideal habitat. in particular, the marginal farming land around Chandler and Walgaloon. Ooh. The Umus not only consumed the crops with gusto, they left large gaps in fences through which poured tens of thousands of rabbits, fucking up everything even more. A delegation of very agitated farmers met with the Minister of Defense, Sir George Pierce. Having served in World War I, the soldier farmers were well aware of the effectiveness of the machine gun, and they requested its deployment. The minister regularly...
I'm so happy. This is the kind minister, of thing I love.
The minister readily agreed. Sir George also supported the deployment on the grounds that the birds would make good target practice.
Of course. Sure.
So to me, even though this is, you know, in the late 20s, this feels like some sort of very camp movie from like the mid to late 60s, like The Mouse That Roared or something like that.
Exactly.
You just got these, you know, the, you know, mustachioed generals standing around wanting to launch missiles at everything.
Exactly. This is a complete Cold War parody somewhere, except it involves violent, dangerous death birds.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, all flightless birds are filled with rage. So I think that's just that they know what they lost. They know what they did.
Yeah, they're embarrassed.
It's very embarrassing.
It's like impotent middle-aged white men.
Exactly.
Yeah, I bet.
Welcome to Australia.
But it just seems like, you know, such an over-the-top kind of like, I know how we'll deal with these birds. Sound the alarm.
Exactly.
We'll deal with them the same way we dealt with the Zulu.
Right. And then, you know, in my mind, this sort of late 60s anti-war parody involves the generals then riding around on like penny farthings and
exactly.
Other
exactly.
Sort of,
absolutely,
you know,
overdressed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Still overdressed. Not dressed like farmers.
No.
For sure. Not that.
No.
They're dressed to fight in the Scottish Highlands.
Yeah, exactly. And they're sweaty. They're annoyed. And I think the birds will win.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah.
We have reached the end of round one.
Easy.
And I'm going to tally up some scores here. Let's take a look. All right. Well, it is a close one.
Okay.
Currently, Betsy is in third place with 10 points. Mike is in second place with 13 points. And Dan just barely edging out with 14 points as we enter round two.
The
Great
experience.
Emu War.
If there are emu generals, I'm going to be really sad.
I swear to God, if they don't get into a Thunderdome at some point, I'm going to be pissed.
I can't wait to hear about the outfits. The emus out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Emus.
Hostilities commence.
The emu uniform.
Wait, there are hostilities. Hostilities are commencing. Forces are on the move.
So, hostilities commenced on November 2nd, 1932. Supreme commander of the anti-emu force was one Major Gwynald Purves Wynne Albury Meredith of the Royal Australian Artillery's 7th Heavy Artillery Unit.
Oh, come on.
Colonel Purves, everybody.
That's highly made up name.
Yeah,
it's so perfect.
Leave some names for somebody else, for God's sakes.
I like that there's a perv right in the middle of it.
I really think we should call him Colonel Perv.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's Colonel Perv from now on.
Yeah, for sure.
I appreciate that it is just like just a string of overly anglicized names beginning with a Welsh one.
Sure. Yeah. Just slap it in there. Just anything.
Yeah.
Did he ever make it to General Perv?
Yeah. Honest to God.
I believe it would be General Meredith.
General Meredith.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
No.
It's not testing well. It's testing poorly.
Yeah. Sorry, General. And I like the fact that a man with artillery experience is brought forward against the birds.
Well, he's not the only one, though.
Under
Meredith's command were troops consisting of Sergeant S. McMurray and Gunner J. O'Halloran.
Okay.
Armed with two Lewis machine guns and 10,000 rounds of ammunition, the troops, all three of them, were deployed with orders to assist the farmers and, according to one newspaper account, collect 100 emu skins that their feathers could be used to make hats.
Gentlemen, get out on that field and bring me a hat. If I don't have a chapeau by sundown, you failed.
Look, the priorities are a little wacky. Yeah.
All I can think of is Brad Pitt from Inglorious Bastards.
I want my emu hats.
You owe me 100 emu scalps. And now, the emu will emu fear scalps. Us. And the emu will talk about us.
Because I have a formal occasion to attend.
The men traveled to the town of Campion, where they sighted some 50 emus.
Oh, my.
Sadly, or luckily, the birds were out of range of the guns. Locals attempted to herd the emus into an ambush, but the birds were too smart for them and obviously split into two small groups, running too fast for the gunners to target them. This did not stop the soldiers from firing a fusillade of bullets, striking maybe a dozen birds, killing two of them.
I like that the birds flanked them. Our first battle in tactics go to the bird.
They're just screaming at them like, I read your book, you bastard.
The next battle occurred on 4 November. Meredith had established an ambush near a local dam, and more than 1,000 emus were spotted heading towards their position. This time, the gunners waited until the birds were in close proximity before opening fire.
Wait until you see the whites of their eyes
they
and
won't
the tans of their legs.
They don't run 30 miles an hour. We'll be sure to stay here next to the dam.
We'll be fine.
Let's put our backs to this dam and wait for thousands of emus to charge to us.
Sadly, the machine gun jammed after only 12 birds were killed.
Oh, no.
And the remainder scattered before any more could be shot. No more birds were sighted that day.
Next time, Meriwether, we're getting camouflage.
Well, so yeah, it's not a great start for the Australian Army. But that was just, that's just day one. let's go to you, panel. What do you think happens next? Dan, let's start with you.
Oh, I'm going to say the birds go on the offensive. It's time. The birds start taking cities. They lay siege to Sydney. There's no way. A counterinsurgency begins, and the birds start bringing in other animals like the kookaburra and the kakapo. And that's it, folks. It's all over.
Oh, is it flashing that zoology degree?
Yeah, there you go. You brought me on for the wrong show.
Mike, how about you?
I was thinking maybe more of a Terminator 2 sort of tactic, where it turns out that the emus are the good guys. And they team up together and fuck the shit out of those rabbits.
Nice.
Yeah, what about the rabbits? Tell me about the rabbits, Phil.
Tell me about the rabbits, Colonel Perv.
That's where jackrabbits came from, actually.
Oh, oh, oh.
I guess I follow them and question, hold them Mike, and I will how call is that them like Colonel Terminator Perv. 2?
How exactly is that Terminator 2?
How exactly is a bunch of emus fucking rabbits like Terminator 2?
No, you're taking the wrong. That scene was cut out, first of all. But it's the fact that the Terminator's the good guy. Like, the Terminator teams up with Sarah Connor.
I see.
I'm talking about, in this Colonel Perv is Sarah Connor in this scenario, and the emus are Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the rabbits are Robert Patrick.
Oh, good to know. Good to know.
That's a tough one.
I think I can see. So first of all, they're down to one machine gun that just poops out a couple bullets at them. Like a poop, poop, like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that happens. But I think the emus, I think they laugh. And, an emu laugh is like a thump. I don't know. It's not good because they're horrible. They're a horrible animal. But I think they've taken their steel eggs, their giant steel eggs.
Sure.
They've made some real cute trebuchets.
Oh.
I think they probably stole that from Colonel Perv. And then they just launch eggs and take those guys out. They have egg all over their faces and their nice tweed outfits. Call it a day. They should have just eaten the rabbits and been happy, those men. They really should. And also, don't bring two machine guns to 30 birds or 30,000 birds or whatever. Like, why do that? If they ask, but like, we'll have some machine guns. And then, the army's like, well, here's two.
Yeah, they brought a gun to an emu fight.
Yeah.
That's a mistake.
They don't understand. It's rough.
That's the Perth way.
And emus are terrible.
I do want to say that I now want a laughing emu as my ringtone. I'm just saying
that. Yeah, I didn't do great. I did. Right. Also, what do you think their version of charge would be? Like,
well, could you perhaps favor us with that?
Yeah, could you lend us a tone?
I mean, it's definitely got to be like a, like that.
Right, sure, yeah.
A little bit of that.
Something off-putting, but terrifying.
Yeah, like scary, yet erotic, but also like a clarinet thing.
Something to the fear of God into a mammal.
Let's take a look at what happens next. The war continues to go poorly for Australia. Despite Meredith's dogged shadowing of various herds of emus, actual casualties are few and very far between. By the fourth day of the campaign, army observers noted that, quote, each pack seems to have its own leader now, a big black-plumed bird which stands fully 6 feet high and keeps watch while his mates carry out their work of destruction and warns them of our approach.
They've learned our tactics. They know who we are.
It's the opposite of the white whale. It's the big black bird.
Meredith, seeking to capitalize on his troops' technological superiority, mounted one of the guns on a truck. This move proved ineffective.
Of course.
Firstly, because the emus could run faster than the truck could drive. Also, the ride was so rough that the gunner was unable to fire any shots. By the 8th of November.
Oh, I love it so much.
6 days after the first engagement, 2,500 rounds of ammunition had been fired.
How many?
How
many rounds of ammunition were fired?
By the 8th of November, six days after the first engagement, 2,500 rounds of ammunition had been fired.
That gun's going to break. Last gun's going to break.
How many beers had been drunk?
Not listed. However, the number of birds killed was reported at around 50.
We couldn't get a good count.
There were just piles of body parts.
Right. By this point, they're
off fighting in some weird country. They don't know why they're there. They're just kids, really.
Someone's going to start playing Fortunate Son, and that's it. We're all over.
Love it.
General Meredith, aka Major Perv. His official report tried to put a little bit of a sheen on it.
Perv, you've been promoted.
Yeah. It was delightful.
We're no help. We are not helping.
Perv's report did try to put a little bit of a positive spin on it, noting that none of his men suffered any casualties.
Oh, well, thank God. The human casualties have been very low, at least by anybody who we know, because who knows downrange of what's going on we randomly shoot into birds.
Whoever was driving the car, who we know was drunk, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's a person with a machine gun just bouncing around the back.
Sure.
Like a fucking fire hose being manned by one person. Whoa!
Yeah. Oh.
An elephant snout.
I just see them like trying to bolt this machine gun onto the roof of a 1932 pickup truck.
Yeah.
And then driving as fast as you can.
Right.
Through the outback. Through the bush.
Through the bush.
If Australia doesn't kill them, they're doing a great job on the way.
It's, you know what though, it's a great round in the Call of Duty game that will inevitably be made of this conflict.
Oh, I hope.
Oh, wow, that would
Call
be
of Duty
wonderful.
Emu, yeah, emu fight. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Operation Emu
War.
Operation Emu. Uh-huh.
I would pay folding money for that game.
I bet it would take off.
Seriously, the rent money rescue is going on that. Yeah, yeah.
I second that emotion.
Yeah.
Terrible. Just terrible.
On the 8th of November, it kind of caved in.
Finally, and then things went badly.
Yes, now.
And here we have the turning point in the war.
Members of the Australian House of Representatives discussed the operation in Parliament and, based on the negative coverage in the local media, withdrew the military personnel and the guns shortly afterward. After the withdrawal, Major Meredith, a.k.a. Major Perv, compared the emus to Zulus and commented on the striking maneuverability of the emus, even while badly wounded. Quote, if we had a military division with a bullet-carrying capacity of these birds, it would face down any army in the world.
Oh,
We must arm the emus.
Yeah. You gotta make friends with it. Exactly.
Right. It's
little
time for Detone.
On their mm-hmm. on their little legs moving so
sure.
fast.
Sure. Some sort of mecha emu. We've perverted the emu by science, and now we must pay the price.
Right, it's like Jurassic Park. Right.
Little bayonets on the tips.
We crossed the emu with a T-Rex. We didn't right. stop to think whether we should do it.
Right. I like thinking about the members of the Australian Parliament. There had to be at least one who's like, there's a worldwide problem going on, and now I'm talking about emus? It's like there has to be a moment where you're sort of like, wow. This wow. I worked really hard to get here, and this is what I'm talking about today. Awesome. That's great. You know what? I think I'm going to start drinking. So.
And that was the first time anybody ever drank in Australia.
Right. 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 Minister Foster, what do you think about that? I'm going to have a big can of beer.
I have an idea. What we should do with all that wheat.
A can the size of a man's head. Oh,
there's more
Lord.
Space in my hand for can.
As big as an emu egg.
Yeah, it's
right.
Emu
as big
hand.
As an emu egg. That's emu. What it says in the advertising.
That's in fact
the original Foster slogan. I think the emu
right.
egg.
Mm. Rezzy, egg. Yeah, we just crack the emu egg open and fill it with beer.
Yeah, a little straw in the top.
Sure. Oh,
like a coconut.
It's like mm-hmm. the coconut.
It's drinks. Like a juice box, but it's a wow. Emu egg.
It's like a juice box that came out of an emu.
Hey, you know what? Just as a good idea, it's as good an idea.
It's best when it's best when you get them warm.
Warm, yeah. Don't let it get cold.
Don't let it get cold.
And then they all
also,
died of salmonella.
Don't let yourself get sober at any point.
Yeah. Because at some point, it. If you sober up, you're going to think, I'm fighting
What's
emu in Australia. What have I done?
Once you get sober enough, then you realize you're drinking a bird embryo out of a juice box.
Exactly.
Yeah. Things have gone downhill.
So clearly, these are tough, smart birds. Mm-hmm. Pal, for points, there is apparently only one way to kill an emu. Multiple choice question. Is it A, running it to exhaustion? B, peppering it with multiple body shots from the machine gun? C, shoot it in the back of its head while its mouth is closed? Or D, emus are functionally immortal. You must wait until the time of the gathering when they will feel an irresistible urge to fight for the prize.
There can be only one.
Right. There can only be one
Betsy,
emu.
Mm-hmm. Let's start with you.
Well, you can't. What? I think everybody knows if you shoot them in the back of the head while their mouth is open, that doesn't work.
Right.
That's only if they're a made emu.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And apparently, you know, multiple shots works for at least 50. So that's, you know, we're talking like an 8%. I just made that up, something like that. I definitely think we're talking about like they get together, they decide when they want to die, you know? Only that, like if maybe they get together at that little, the birdie congress at the end and you know, they're like, well, I'm going to walk into the desert and take my leave. And that's the only way to do it. Cause they I don't want to say super human, but yeah, they're built like a brick shit house. They are okay. ready to go.
Dan?
I think you have to run them to death. Only because it seems like everything you can run to death at some point. And this
seems more than anything else, the human's real advantage over other life forms.
It is in fact the only advantage we humans have, which if you think about it, being on an animal, humans cannot run faster than anybody else. We can run longer than anybody else. So basically humans, once again, to bring it back around, humans are terminators. We are what are called persistence hunters, among other terms for it. We basically start running after a group of animals, and gradually one of them will start getting tired, and you and humans just keep going. And since we're smart enough to plan and have good distance and color vision, we can just keep following you. We may not catch you, but we'll just keep following you until you fall over dead, and then we will eat you. And that's why we're the scariest things on Earth.
As I understand it, it's because we can sweat rather than pant.
We can
and
sweat,
so we can
and
just
also
keep going.
Our breathing is not dependent on the movement of our limbs. Huh. So other animals who are four-legged, their movement affects their breathing because, and I'm making a hand gesture for everybody at home, and it's a dirty one. If you're moving it like an animal, like a quadruped animal, you're pumping breathing. And if you're a human being, you just breathe as you breathe. So you can keep breathing and keep running. So humans run marathons. Other animals do. There are other animals that carve great distances, but humans can basically just, if humans are good shape, they, yeah, not these emus, but humans can run for long periods of time at sort of a trot. So humans can trot, but they can trot for a really long time. So I'll just keep watching you, and I'm smart enough to track you. Isn't that a creepy sound? Welcome to my zoology degree, everybody. And that's my
Mike,
TED Talk.
What about
Thank you for coming.
I think the only logical solution is to take off and nuke the site from orbit.
It's the only way to be sure.
It's the only way to be sure. Exactly. Thank you very much.
So it turns out the answer is C. Shoot it in the back of the head when its mouth is closed. Apparently, when its mouth is open, it'll survive. The bullet will just go right through. Emus, it turns out, can absorb about a dozen bullet shots to the body with little immediate damage. In fact, stated one of the farmers, the only way to kill an emu is to shoot it in the back of the head when its mouth is closed.
I love that that's a direct quote.
Yeah.
I wonder how you get, what the method for getting it to close its mouth is.
Well, Here's the follow-up. Apparently, they almost never have their mouths closed.
Right.
Do you have to engage them in conversation and then make sure that they're listening? They're like,
you have to activate them.
Or we have found a purpose for the venomous wheats of Australia. You feed it to the bird, and while the bird is swallowing, pow, in the back of the head, in sort of a Carlito's way, I guess. I don't know. Does somebody get shot in the head in Carlito's way, or is it? Goodfellas, we've made
it's
a reference.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's like you can only do that with a made bird. Joe Pesci.
Pop, right in the back of the head.
Oh, no.
Oh.
You had to be full-blooded emu. It's real, you know. It's
exactly.
A special style
exactly. Exactly. It's a real
thing. All
right. I just leave this among the emus.
They're creepy tongues, you know? They must have like those, you know, those creepy pokey bird tongues.
Oh, yeah, terrible.
No, I don't actually, but.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Look it up.
Well, there's a Google adventure for you.
Yeah, don't go down that rabbit hole.
Definitely don't look up duck sex either.
But
No.
As long as we've been talking about all this stuff, have you forgotten that there's a war on?
I did, damn it. I forgot about war.
Can I forget for the war for 1 second?
It's time to shoot.
I bought all those bonds to fight the emus. Haven't I done my part? I recycled tin. Haven't I done what I could?
Well,
we have a victory garden.
After the withdrawal of the military, the emu attacks on the crops continues. Farmers again ask for support, citing the hot weather and drought that brought emus invading farms in the thousands. The Premier of Western Australia lent his strong support for the renewal of military assistance. Acting on these requests, the Minister of Defense approved the resumption of military operations. He defended his decision in the Senate, explaining why the soldiers were necessary to combat the serious agricultural threat of the large emu population. The ministry stipulated they would only supply arms and ammunition, and the farmers themselves would need to do the actual fighting. Meredith was once again placed in the field due to an apparent lack of experienced machine gunners in the area.
Oh my God. That's like he wanted a mission, and for his sins, they gave him one.
Bless their heart. Yeah, really.
I want you to go into the desert and terminate Major Meredith's command.
Exactly.
His
with
methods have become
prejudice.
Unsound.
Right.
I'm really enjoying the fact that this story contains premiers and ministers and things like that, because it sounds sort of Games of Thrones-y. You know, like the premier said that we must take on, I don't know, as an American, I just like that they have fun names for things. We're just all like, dude, you know, like we don't have fun names. So there you go.
Yeah, it's got like a His Dark Materials vibe to it.
Sure. Yeah. like the minister said, we must go and assassinate the emu.
Yeah. The talking emu. The battle emus.
Right.
Take up the arms.
And the people must do it themselves. Yeah. And they must shoot
it's
them in the back of the head with their
mouths. It's not a war against the emu. It's a police action.
I feel this is more like a Les Mis kind of, you know, barricades in the streets kind of thing.
Oh,
stole
I like
a loaf
it.
Of bread, if you will.
Yeah. Somewhere that emu is singing.
That brings us to the end of round two. And well, we have had a bit of a reversal of fortune. Mike is now in third place with 29 points, followed by Dan with 31 in second place. But Betsy has rocketed into first place with 37 points.
It's the singing. It's
I'm basically the major perv of this game right now.
Thank you, major perv.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we come to round three.
Uh-oh.
The aftermath. Summarizing the emu culls, as they're now calling them, ornithologist Dominic Savertny commented, quote, "The machine gunner's dreams of a point-blank fire into a serried mass of emus was soon dissipated. The emu command had evidently ordered guerrilla tactics, and its unwieldy army soon split up into innumerable small units that made use of the military equipment's uneconomic and unwieldy nature."
They've blended in with the locals.
Being a human is so embarrassing.
There should be like music from a Ken Burns documentary playing underneath you as you recount this. Like a Shokan farewell. Something like that playing in the background.
It does feel like maybe by guerrilla tactics, they literally mean gorillas.
by the tactics they learned from gorillas. They brought some gorilla advisors in who informed them about poop flinging. And that was the end of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
After a month, a crestfallen field force of Western Australian farmers led by Major Perv withdrew from the combat area. How do you go home and tell your family about this?
You lost to the emu. You have lost to the emu. Western Australia belongs to them now.
You know, I feel like the farmers had to go in and surrender all their weapons to the birds.
Exactly. Daddy, did you beat the birds?
Like, it's embarrassing. The last Australian holding onto that helicopter. Flying Western Australia.
And you know that they've only been eating eggs for a very long time. Right, like, exactly. That's the only available.
No. That's that and jackrabbits.
So yeah. By December, word of the Great Emu War had spread outside of Australia, reaching the United Kingdom. Conservationists protested the cull as extermination of the rare emu. I was going to say, given that there were 30,000 of these things tramping all across, are they really that rare?
No, I'm going to go with... Maybe semi-rare.
None of this is working. None of this is successful so far.
Medium
but rare. Despite that, farmers kept repeatedly requesting military assistance. In 1934, in 1943, and in 1948, only to be turned down by the government. Mired in a PR nightmare and with no real solution to the issue of crops and disgruntled veteran farmers, the Australian government was looking for a way to make the whole solution go away.
That's when the American government got involved.
Mired in a PR nightmare with no real solution to the issue of crops and disgruntled veteran farmers, the Australian government was looking for a way to make the whole situation go away. Question for you, panel. What did the Australian government do, and what would be your solution to the problem? Let's start with Mike this time.
Oh, shit. What did they actually do? I think maybe they offered them birthright citizenship. For the emu, because that fixes the problem all whole. You just make them the farmers, teach the emu how to farm. Like, teach it, you know the old saying, you know,
teach an emu to farm.
Teach an emu to farm. Right. Yeah. Taught an emu to farm.
Maybe like that. And I think for me, I probably just would have done the reasonable thing and left Australia completely. I just would have left it to the emu.
Just surrendered the entire continent.
I'm gonna be I don't see any reason to not. I mean, like, let the emus deal with the rabbits and the spiders and all the other stuff. And meanwhile, you just move to Los Angeles and surf.
There you go.
Okay, Betsy, what's your solution? What do you think, Betsy, the Australian government did, and what is your solution?
I think they came up with another non-brilliant solution and burned the fields. And I would like
that's a good one, actually. I like that.
Yeah.
This set the whole fucking place on fire.
I mean, sure.
Fire will solve this. Cleanse the earth. Fire will make it good.
Tell me you cannot imagine Major Perv doing that. And I think that they had the humans run away, as we always do, is what I would like to think happened. And I'd like to think that that's probably when supportive shoes were invented, so we could run even farther from the flames of the pure hell that was Western Australia during the emo wars.
Yeah, that's where Dr. Scholes came from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Dan, how about you?
I think the Australian government probably reached some sort of detente with the spiders and used them as a paramilitary force to help take out the emus. And I think the real answer, because this is Australia, is to make them a Vegemite sandwich. And I can't think of anything that would not solve this better than a Vegemite sandwich.
Has anyone ever tried Vegemite?
I have.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's sort of like a fermented planty thing.
It's a very salty fermented planty thing.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that I have been told if you grew up eating it, you would like it. And I ate it and went, yeah, I don't want any more, but it's okay. I have had it on little tea sandwiches that were good, but it was part of a larger operation.
So, yeah, so if it's got something, if it's got something sweet with it, it's not bad.
Right. Yeah. It's a lot on its own.
Okay. You cut it up into tiny sandwiches. That makes it more adorable.
And yes. Yeah. It also makes you feel huge. And probably what they did with the emus in order to, like, you know.
They just used, like, perspective games to make the emus think that they were really tall.
Where are we? I don't know. The sandwiches are so small. Right?
The sandwiches are gigantic.
Right. Am
they
I huge?
Their beaks
is
together
the
with Vegemite.
Right.
So they could shoot them in the back of the head.
Pop in the back of the head.
What the Australian government actually did was to opt for a time-tested solution to almost any problem. They threw money at it. So instead of sending armed troops to the region, the Australian government put a bounty on any dead emu that was brought in and let the farmers do the rest.
So they have a policy,
to subdue the moo.
This policy certainly made the farmers much happier, but unsurprisingly did little to impact the emu population. Finally, the use of exclusion barriers and fencing became a popular means of keeping emus out of agricultural areas. So I guess I feel like a fence would be the much more obvious answer to this this problem than a military operation. Why do you think it took so long to come around to a fence? And why do you think that declaring war on the emus was like the first way to go?
I think you're not thinking in the Australian mindset.
Yeah, I was going to say, this was a government run by white men.
Yeah, I was going to say this.
Right,
sounds
that was
like
why, that's the answer. Right. That's why war was the first answer.
It's a group. It's a group of dudes.
Dudes.
Reaction.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say something. At least somebody would probably think shooting emus on this. This is a weekend operation. This is. I'm sure when it got to day three, people were like, this is not what we expected.
This is not what I signed up
we
for.
We really expected this to be. Although I did like when you said they threw money at the problem, I was just thinking they paid the emu off. Like I just picture somebody like grainy footage of a field where a guy in a trench coat's handing an emu a bag, like a briefcase and just like
But the emu is also wearing a trench coat and a fedora.
Right, exactly. No, all the emu are in trench coats. Right.
Like a World War I tiny helmet. So nobody can get him.
Right. So nobody can come back and they're just hand. Yeah. Is this what leather is that case? It's not what you think it is. And then we were all fine and the emu just like
no, it's split. Not.
it's all good. It's all good.
No, it's for the god. It's a cow.
It's a cow, for God's sakes. We don't have that kind of money. We're paying you off.
So the legacy of the Great Emu War lives on. In 2019, a musical adaptation of the story was premiered. It was called The Great Emu War of 1932. It was workshopped in Melbourne. An action comedy film titled The Emu War premiered at Monster Fest in October of 2023. And another action comedy movie retelling the events called The Great Emu War, written by John Cleese, Rob Schneider, and Jim Jefferies, was supposed to begin production in 2023 or 2024.
Oh my God, get on it. I want to see it.
That's an odd grouping.
Sounds Mike, great. You're a filmmaker. Can I hear your pitch for your Emu War production?
No, Jesus. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's probably going to be steampunk.
Mecha emu.
Yeah, I'm going to go mecha emu with it. That it's sort of like, I'm going to think it's going to be after the emu has already won the war. We're going to set it, and there's going to be a chosen one. Maybe there'll be magic. I don't know. It's just, here's the thing. You asked me that, and it's sort of like the emu, obviously, the emu movie has been done to death at this point, and I just don't think we need another emu movie.
They are hard to work with.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, like Dustin
Hoffman. I feel like there's like an opportunity for a soft relaunch or a reboot of the franchise.
I mean, I could see it on a streaming service, but it's just sort of like, you know, it'll be one season and done.
I say
maybe
we go
a prestige
animated.
British drama. Oh yeah, an anime version.
Then you don't have to shoot on like location. Everybody knows that's going to be rough. And then the emus themselves are ornery, to say the least. And then you got to make tiny, tiny helmets for them, which is a big budget.
I like the idea of a multi-episode Ken Burnsian kind of approach.
Yeah. Sure, exactly.
Lots of slow pans over photographs.
Maybe it's in black and white. You know.
All of Major Perv's letters home, and receipts from the bar, just slowly panning across various receipts.
It was like a forensic accounting documentary.
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty much, and then there was more drinking. Fair dinkum, indeed. You know,
there's another. We're getting another letter from the front requesting more beer.
Right, right.
It's just gonna be called
and one more machine gun.
Right.
It's just going to be called The War. And like, you know.
This time they want some beer and a net and a trident.
Episode 5, Fair Dinkum.
Exactly. Episode 5.
Which was also the name of episode 4
right.
and 3.
Yeah, they're all named Fair Dinkum.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Except the final episode, Billabong. And there you go. And that's, yeah. There you go.
Twist. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, that's the one that gets you. Like, is it going to be, oh, no, it's just more emu crap. Oh, I thought this was going to be something different. Yeah. No.
It's raining.
Well, that panel is our final round. I've got the scores tallied here, and they do tell quite a tale. Before we get into that, however, I want to give you guys an opportunity to crow about your stuff. What you got going on? Mike, let's start with you.
Well, I have a movie that's out on demand and will probably be streaming relatively soon on Paramount Plus, but right now you can see this movie that I made called Alma and the Wolf. You can download it or watch it on the Apple or Amazon or any of those kind of things. Mm-hmm. It stars Ethan Embry and Lee Jun Lee, who you may know from Sinners and Babylon. And it's gotten great reviews, and you know, go download it and check it out. It's a really very proud of it. It's a really good movie.
Great, thanks. Dan, what you got going on?
Later on, I'm going to make a sandwich.
Great. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Betsy, how about you?
I run and own a little flower farm on the tiny island that we live on. It's called Club Meadow, if you'd like to look it up. And we have over 800 types of dahlias that are just blooming just right now, about a little under 2,000 plants. So it's a very, very cool time. And so we sell flowers. And this time of year, people come and do photo shoots and stuff in the field too. So
okay, great. Cool. And that's clubmeadow.com?
Clubmeadowcameno.com. But just look up Club Meadow. I mean, it'll come up right away. So
okay, perfect. Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for that. Mm-hmm. All right. Well. Going into this round, Betsy was ahead in first place with 42. Mike right behind her with 39, and Dan bringing up the rear with 37. At the end of the game, Betsy has 50 points.
Ooh, wow.
50. Big stretch.
Dan, not quite good enough with 48 points. However, through a stunning upset, and our new champion, Mike, has pulled ahead with 51 points. Congratulations, Mike.
Guys, I feel like just being here is award enough.
Right.
Guys, it's really, it's an honor just to be nominated, etc.
Excellent.
Well,
That's about it for this week's edition of Wait What. Congrats to this week's winner, Mike. And a huge thanks to all my guests, Michael Patrick Jan, Betsy Morris, and Dan Love. Tune in again next time on Wait What, when we'll set sail in our ship of discovery on the strange tides of history, seeking the terra incognito of knowledge.
Wait What is hosted, written, and researched by me, Phil Ahrensberg. The show is edited by Dern Gleaves, and our music is by Wesley Devine.